against nature and reason, create a new world of evils, and fill human life with imaginary wants and vain disquiets. The man of pride has 1,000 wants which only his own pride has created, and these render him as full of trouble as if God had created him with 1,000 appetites, without creating anything that was proper to satisfy them. Envy and ambition have also their endless wants, which disquiet the souls of men, and by their contradictory motions render them as foolishly miserable as those that want to fly and creep at the same time. Let but any complaining, disquieted man tell you the ground of his uneasiness, and you will plainly see that he is the author of his own torment, that he is vexing himself at some imaginary evil, which will cease to torment him as soon as he is content to be that which God and nature and reason require him to be. If you should see a man passing his days in disquiet, because he could not walk upon the water, or catch birds as they fly by him, you would readily confess that such a one might thank himself for such uneasiness. But now if you look into all the most tormenting disquiets of life, you will find them all thus absurd, where people are only tormented by their own folly, and vexing themselves at such things as no more concern them, nor are any more their proper good, than walking upon the water or catching birds. What can you conceive more silly and extravagant than to suppose a man racking his brains and studying night and day how to fly, wandering from his own house and home, worrying himself with climbing upon every ascent, cringing and courting everybody he meets to lift him up from the ground, bruising himself with continual falls, and at last breaking his neck? And all this from an imagination that it would be glorious to have the eyes of people gazing up at him, and mighty happy to eat and drink and sleep at the top of the highest trees in the kingdom. Would you not readily own that such a one was only disquieted by his own folly? If you ask what it signifies to suppose such silly creatures as these, as are nowhere to be found in human life, it may be answered that wherever you see an ambitious man, there you see this vain and senseless flyer. Again, if you should see a man that had a large pond of water, yet living in continual thirst, not suffering himself to drink half a draught, for fear of lessening his pond, if you should see him wasting his time and strength in fetching more water to his pond, always thirsty, yet always carrying a bucket of water in his hand, watching early and late to catch the drops of rain, gaping after every cloud and running greedily into every mire and mud in hopes of water, and always studying how to make every ditch empty itself into his pond. If you should see him grow gray and old in these anxious labors, and at last end a careful, thirsty life by falling into his own pond, would you not say that such a one was not only the author of all his own disquiets, but was foolish enough to be reckoned among idiots and madmen? But yet, foolish and absurd as this character is, it does not represent half the follies and absurd disquiets of the covetous man. I could now easily proceed to show the same effects of all our other passions, and make it plainly appear that all our miseries, vexations, and complaints are entirely of our own making, and that in the same absurd manner as in these instances of the covetous and ambitious man. Look where you will, and you will see all worldly vexations, but like the vexation of him that was always in mire and mud in search of water to drink, when he had more at home than was sufficient for 100 horses. Salia, footnote 22, a name which through its Greek form has a suggestion of hollowness. Salia is always telling you how provoked she is, what intolerable, shocking things happen to her, what monstrous usage she suffers, and what vexations she meets with everywhere. She tells you that her patience is quite worn out, and there is no bearing the behavior of people. Every assembly that she is at sends her home provoked. Something or other has been said or done that no reasonable, well-bred person ought to bear. Poor people that want her charity are sent away with hasty answers, not because she has not a heart to part with any money, but because she is too full of some trouble of her own to attend to the complaints of others. Celia has no business upon her hands but to receive the income of a plentiful fortune. But yet, by the doleful turn of her mind, you would be apt to think that she had neither food nor lodging. If you see her look more pale than ordinary, if her lips tremble when she speaks to you, it is because she is just come from a visit, where Lupus took no notice at all of her, but talked all the time to Lucinda, who has not half her fortune. When cross accidents have so disordered her spirits that she is forced to send for the doctor to make her able to eat, she tells him in great anger at Providence that she never was well since she was born and that she envies every beggar that she sees in health. This is the disquiet life of Celia, who has nothing to torment her but her own spirit. If you could inspire her with Christian humility, you need do no more to make her as happy as any person in the world. This virtue would make her thankful to God for half so much health as she has had, and help her to enjoy more for the time to come. This virtue would keep off tremblings of the spirit and loss of appetite, and her blood would need nothing else to sweeten it. I have just touched upon these absurd characters for no other end but to convince you in the plainest manner that the strictest rules of religion are so far from rendering a life dull, anxious, and uncomfortable, as is above objected, that, on the contrary, all the miseries, vexations, and complaints that are in the world are owing to the want of religion being directly caused by those absurd passions which religion teaches us to deny. For all the wants which disturb human life, which make us uneasy to ourselves, quarrelsome with others, and unthankful to God, which weary us in vain labors and foolish anxieties, which carry us from project to project, from place to place, in a poor pursuit of we know not what, are the wants which neither God nor nature nor reason hath subjected us to, but are solely infused into us by pride, envy, ambition, and covetousness. So far, therefore, as you reduce your desires to such things as nature and reason require, so far as you regulate all the motions of your heart by the strict rules of religion, so far you remove yourself from that infinity of wants and vexations which torment every heart that is left to itself. Most people, indeed, confess that religion preserves us from a great many evils and helps us in many respects to a more happy enjoyment of ourselves. But then they imagine that this is only true of such a moderate share of religion, as only gently restrains us from the excesses of our passions. They suppose that the strict rules and restraints of an exalted piety are such contradictions to our nature as must needs make our lives dull and uncomfortable. Although the weakness of this objection sufficiently appears from what hath been already said, yet I shall add one word more to it. This objection supposes that religion, moderately practiced, adds much to the happiness of life, but that such heights of piety as the perfection of religion requireth have a contrary effect. It supposes, therefore, that it is happy to be kept from the excesses of envy, but unhappy to be kept from other degrees of envy, that it is happy to be delivered from a boundless ambition, but unhappy to be without a more moderate ambition. It supposes also that the happiness of life consists in a mixture of virtue and vice, a mixture of ambition and humility, charity and envy, heavenly affection and covetousness, all which is as absurd as to suppose that it is happy to be free from excessive pains, but unhappy to be without more moderate pains, or that the happiness of health consists in being partly sick and partly well. For if humility be the peace and rest of the soul, then no one has so much happiness from humility as he that is the most humble. If excessive envy is a torment of the soul, he most perfectly delivers himself from torment, that most perfectly extinguishes every spark of envy. If there is any peace and joy in doing any action according to the will of God, he that brings the most of his actions to this rule does most of all increase the peace and joy of his life. And thus it is in every virtue. If you act up to every degree of it, the more happiness you have from it. And so of every vice, if you only abate its excesses, you do but little for yourself. But if you reject it in all degrees, then you feel the true ease and joy of a reformed mind. As for example, if religion only restrains the excesses of revenge, but lets the spirit still live within you in lesser instances, your religion may have made your life a little more outwardly decent, but not made you at all happier or easier in yourself. But if you have once sacrificed all thoughts of revenge in obedience to God and are resolved to return good for evil at all times, that you may render yourself more like to God and fitter for his mercy in the kingdom of love and glory, this is the height of virtue that will make you feel its happiness. Secondly, as to those satisfactions and enjoyments which an exalted piety requireth us to deny ourselves, this deprives us of no real comfort of life. For first, piety requires us to renounce no ways of life where we can act reasonably and offer what we do to the glory of God. All ways of life, all satisfactions and enjoyments that are within these bounds are no way denied us by the strictest rules of piety. Whatever you can do or enjoy is in the presence of God, as his servant, as his rational creature that has received reason and knowledge from him, all that you can perform conformably to a rational nature and the will of God, all this is allowed by the laws of piety. And will you think that your life will be uncomfortable unless you may displease God, be a fool, and mad, and act contrary to that reason and wisdom which he has implanted in you? And as for those satisfactions which we dare not offer to a holy God, which are only invented by the folly and corruption of the world, which inflame our passions and sink our souls into grossness and sensuality, and render us incapable of the divine favor, either here or hereafter, surely it can be no uncomfortable state of life to be rescued by religion from such self-murder and to be rendered capable of eternal happiness. Let us suppose a person destitute of that knowledge which we have from our senses, placed somewhere alone by himself, in the midst of a variety of things which he did not know how to use, that he has by him bread, wine, water, golden dust, iron chains, gravel, garments, fire, etc. Let it be supposed that he has no knowledge of the right use of these things, nor any direction from his senses how to quench his thirst, or satisfy his hunger, or make any use of the things about him. Let it be supposed that in his draught he puts golden dust in his eyes. When his eyes smart, he puts wine into his ears. That in his hunger he puts gravel into his mouth, that in pain he loads himself with iron chains, that feeling cold he puts his feet in the water, that being frighted at the fire he runs away from it, that being weary he makes a seat of his bread. Let it be supposed that, through his ignorance of the right use of the things that are about him, he will vainly torment himself whilst he lives, and at last die, blinded with dust, choked with gravel, and loaded with irons. Let it be supposed that some good being came to him and showed him the nature and use of all the things that were about him, and gave him such strict rules of using them as would certainly, if observed, make him the happier for all that he had, and deliver him from the pains of hunger and thirst and cold. Now, could you with any reason affirm that those strict rules of using those things that were about him had rendered the poor man's life dull and uncomfortable? Now this is in some measure a representation of the strict rules of religion. They only relieve our ignorance, save us from tormenting ourselves, and teach us to use everything about us to our proper advantage. Man is placed in a world full of a variety of things. His ignorance makes him use many of them as absurdly as the man that put dust in his eyes to relieve his thirst or put on chains to remove pain. Religion, therefore, here comes in to his relief and gives him strict rules of using everything that is about him, that by so using them suitably to his own nature and the nature of the things, he may have always the pleasure of receiving a right benefit from them. It shows him what is strictly right in meat and drink and clothes, and that he has nothing else to expect from the things of this world but to satisfy such wants of his own, and then to extend his assistance to all his brethren, that as far as he is able, he may help all his fellow creatures to the same benefit from the world that he hath. It tells him that this world is incapable of giving him any other happiness, and that all endeavors to be happy in heaps of money or acres of land, in fine clothes, rich beds, stately equipage, and show and splendor, are only vain endeavors, ignorant attempts after impossibilities, these things being no more able to give the least degree of happiness than dust in the eyes can cure thirst or gravel in the mouth satisfy hunger. But like dust and gravel misapplied will only serve to render him more unhappy by such an ignorant misuse of them. It tells him that although this world can do no more for him than satisfy these wants of the body, yet that there is a much greater good prepared for man than eating, drinking, and dressing, that it is yet invisible to his eyes, being too glorious for the apprehension of flesh and blood, but reserved for him to enter upon as soon as this short life is over, where in a new body formed to an angelic likeness he shall dwell in the light and glory of God to all eternity. It tells him that this state of glory will be given to all those that make a right use of the things of this present world, who do not blind themselves with golden dust or eat gravel, or groan under loads of iron of their own putting on, but use bread, water, wine, and garments for such ends as are according to nature and reason, and who, with faith and thankfulness, worship the kind giver of all that they enjoy here and hope for hereafter. Now can anyone say that the strictest rules of such a religion as this debar us of any of the comforts of life? Might it not as justly be said that those rules that only hinder a man from choking himself with gravel? For the strictness of these rules only consists in the exactness of their rectitude. Who would complain of the severe strictness of a law that, without any exception, forbade the putting of dust into your eyes? Who could think it too rigid that there were no abatements? Now this is the strictness of religion. It requires nothing of us strictly or without abatements. But where every degree of the thing is wrong, where every indulgence does us some hurt. If religion forbids all instances of revenge without any exception, it is because all revenge is of the nature of poison. And though we do not take so much as to put an end to life, yet if we take any at all, it corrupts the whole mass of blood and makes it difficult to be restored to our former health. If religion commands an universal charity to love our neighbor as ourselves, to forgive and pray for all our enemies without any reserve, it is because all degrees of love are degrees of happiness that strengthen and support the divine life of the soul and are as necessary to its health and happiness as proper food is necessary to the health and happiness of the body. If religion has laws against laying up treasures upon earth and commands us to be content with food and raiment, it is because every other use of the world is abusing it to our own vexation and turning all its conveniences into snares and traps to destroy us. It is because this plainness and simplicity of life secures us from the cares and pains of restless pride and envy, and makes it easier to